Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 281. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about beaches and bridges and a quite famous opera house as we go to Sydney, Australia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. Well, we'll start with the bad news, which is this scare about bed bugs has gotten worse because in Atlanta, there's apparently now a bed bug that is carrying a superbug, a staph infection that is resistant to antibiotics. There's a combination we don't want. And in other bad news, for those people who have enjoyed how open has been crossing borders in Europe as of recent days, some countries are starting to close their borders to reintroduce border controls because of problems with trans-border crime. The most recent one is Denmark will be closing their borders with Germany and Sweden, and you'll have to go through border control just like the old days. And then in better news, if you like social networks and you like to fly, you might be interested in a new social network called Social Flights. And this particular social network helps you find places on private planes to fly from one location to another. You can check out all three of those stories at the show notes at amateurtraveler.com.
I'd like to welcome to the show Alix. Alix is coming to us from Alix and Jace's Amazing Adventure, their blog site, and I'll have a link to that in the show notes, and come to talk to us about Sydney, Australia. Alix, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Chris. Good to be here.
And if I call you Alix at some point during the show, my apologies. Alix is not a name that I'm familiar with, A-L-I-X.
Yes, it's actually French, which is a bit unusual.
But you are not from France. You are, in fact, from Australia, I believe.
That is correct. I was actually born and bred in Sydney. My father is Australian. My mother is Peruvian, of all things.
Interesting. Okay, which explains the French name.
Totally.
And although you were going to be talking about Sydney, Australia, you are actually currently sitting in Istanbul, Turkey. So the goal of this show will be to try and make you terribly homesick. I understand you've been preparing by drinking Australian tea that you brought with you.
No, I actually didn't bring it. My friend Lisa in Sydney sent a care package, which of course had to include Vegemite, as well as Milo, some Cadbury chocolate from Australia, my favorite tea, Williamson tea, which is actually British, grown in India and China. And so I'm having a homesick afternoon.
And for long-time listeners of the show, and I mean the 12 of you who are really, really long-time listeners of the show, the second episode of the show was actually recorded in Sydney in a parking garage in the car there, which I was using as a mobile studio on my last and only trip to Sydney, Australia. So we have talked briefly about Sydney, Australia, but a long, long time ago, and the format of the show really hadn't been fixed at that point. So I wanted to come back to a wonderful city. Why should people visit Sydney, Australia?
Well, it really is one of the most beautiful cities in the world. Rough Guide actually says it's as beautiful as any city in the world with a setting that only Rio de Janeiro can rival. And I've been to Rio. I think Sydney's more beautiful, but I'm probably biased.
And when you say it's a beautiful setting, can you describe the setting a bit for those people who apparently have been living under a rock?
Well, for those that haven't been living under a rock, you probably know that it's actually on a harbour. which is not very wide. It's not like San Francisco Bay. And there's lots of curves in and out, lots of little bays and coves. And it's very green. And, of course, you have the Sydney Harbour Bridge, which is an Australian icon, and the Opera House right there, which is another Australian icon. And like I said, it's very green and it's got beaches all up and down the coast as well. Beautiful light-coloured sand, great surf breaks for those people who surf. So it's just a really lovely setting.
Okay. And what would you recommend as an itinerary for people who go to Sydney?
That's a tough one. It really depends on how long you have. So probably the really important things to do are obviously go to Sydney Harbour and see the Opera House, see the bridge, you know, walk around through the Botanic Gardens, which is some big gardens that are right there behind the Opera House. And then I would go to Bondi Beach, which is a world famous beach, and do the Bondi to Coogee Beach walk, which is a coastal walk. So you've got the ocean on one side and these pretty interesting rock formations and cliffs on the other side. And then back in Sydney Harbour, I'd catch the ferry to Manly, which is on the north side of the city. And you can go swimming and surfing at Manly, go to a cafe or restaurant and just enjoy the atmosphere.
Okay. And I'm going to pause here at this point and slow you down a little bit. As we go to the harbour, let's go back to that. Do you recommend we take in something at the Opera House, or we just walk up the steps and take our picture like all the other tourists? Or
well, if you're into theatre or music, they have a lot of classical music concerts there, ballet, opera, absolutely. I would definitely recommend going and seeing a show. You can also do a tour. So they have a couple of different tours. There's a behind-the-scenes tour. I haven't actually been on that since I was in junior school, so it was a long time ago.
We did that tour and did enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really great because you get to see all the different theatre spaces that they have and how they store everything and get to go up on stage. And, yeah, it's really fun. And they tell you the history and, you know, point out really interesting architectural features inside and outside. So it's definitely worthwhile.
Well, you mentioned the Harbour Bridge, and which has, by the way, one of the best views of the Opera House. Now, there is another activity that is popular, which is climbing the Harbour Bridge. Is that something you recommend, have done?
Yes, I have done it. I did it a few years ago with my family. I think it's worthwhile doing. Obviously, if you're afraid of heights, don't do it. But also, it's relatively expensive. So particularly if you're traveling in a group or with your family, it's something, I think the cheapest one is like $125 Australian.
Okay.
Obviously now with the Australian dollar being stronger than the American dollar.
Right, which is unusual historically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and the other thing that I found that was a barrier to us is, as somebody who's a photographer, the fact that I couldn't take my own camera.
Yes.
That they don't want you to be dropping things on cars going by on the bridge for obvious reasons. And so you, in fact, get suited up in these jumpsuits and can't bring anything that's going to dangle or possibly drop, including a camera, which, you know, makes it disappointing. I mean, they will take pictures of you, but you can't use that as your vantage point to take pictures of the harbor, for instance.
Yeah, that's true, which is why the other alternative is to go up one of the pylons on the sides of the bridge. So you can go up there and still get a great view.
Which is what we did.
Mm-hmm. It's not as high, obviously.
And it was free or almost free, as far as I recall.
Yeah, I haven't actually done that again for a long time. So I think the cost is pretty nominal. But that's definitely a much cheaper option than getting suited up in the grey suit and climbing to the top of the bridge.
Excellent. Okay. And then I think you went from there to Bondi Beach and the beach walk.
Mm.
Bondi Beach, what time of year is the best time to come? Once we start talking about beaches, I think time of year makes a big difference.
Well, I mean, for the beaches, definitely late spring and into summer.
Okay.
Summers can be, last summer, apparently I wasn't actually in Sydney at the time, but it was a pretty awful summer. It rained quite a lot in January in particular. So I would definitely go October, November, December are probably the nicest months. They're not quite as hot, but still really mild and sunny. And the other good thing is in November, if you want to go and do the Bondi to Coogee Beach walk, there's a sculptural exhibition that's on for the first 2 weeks in November usually. And they have a whole lot of different sculptures outdoors along that walk. So it becomes a very popular thing to do in the first 2 weeks of November.
as I was growing up, and before we started recording, I was mentioning that I have cousins in Australia, or who come from Australia at least, one of whom lived with us for 2 years. And I had a hard time as a kid picturing the fact that the seasons were, to my point of view, backwards. And they kept talking about the way they celebrated Christmas was eating watermelon and surfing. And the middle of what our summer was obviously their coldest weather. That's something that I think most people know who are travelers at this point, but it is interesting how it changes some of the traditions, for instance, around the middle of summer when you do get a Christmas break.
Yeah, well, I always thought it was really strange having holidays in the middle of the year. For me, it seemed to make more sense that you have your long school holidays at the end of the year, December and into January. So right. Everyone's got a different perspective on that one.
Exactly. Okay, and then from there you were going north of the harbour.
Yeah, so from Circular Quay, which is the main ferry terminal in the city right next to the Opera House, you can catch a ferry to Manly and back. And so it means you get to get out on the water and see the other side. So you get to see all the little bays and all the beautiful houses that are on the harbour there in Sydney.
And where would you recommend we go when we're in Manly? Got a favourite tea house or...?
It seems to change every time that I'm there. So I think you can go to one of the pubs there and sit down and watch a game. They have beer gardens. So if you're interested in sport and beer and, you know, like football or that kind of thing, or in summer watching cricket and you don't want to go and see a live game or you can't, then you can sit back in the beer garden at the hotel or the pub there in Manly and just, you know, enjoy the sunshine and a nice cold beer and the cricket.
Okay. And then you mentioned the botanical gardens. And I'd have to say, love the botanical gardens. My son and I did. My wife and daughter were a bit put off by the, what is it, foot and a half wide, I want to say fruit bats, flying foxes.
Oh, yes.
That inhabited the trees there of the botanical gardens.
Yeah, they're a bit of a pest, actually. I quite like them, but some people get a bit freaked out. They're very large, but they're completely and utterly into fruit, so there's no fear of being attacked. They don't really care about humans. They're just happy roosting in the trees, and you get to see them migrate in the evenings. So if you're walking through around in the city, they actually migrate from the botanical gardens to Centennial Park, which is a large park in the eastern suburbs, and they sort of fly in between those two parks.
Okay. And what else would you recommend we do while we're in Sydney?
I would go to Taronga Zoo, particularly if you're a fan of animals and if you've got children who often like animals. It's actually right on the harbour, so it's a really well-run zoo and they have a great bird show. And I was reading up on it online and one of my friends actually did the next thing I'm about to say, which is they have something called Roar and Snore, where you get to spend it's so cute. You get to spend the night in the zoo. So you go there just after they close. It usually happens Friday, Saturday and Sunday nights, but they also during school holidays, so throughout the summer, and then three other times a year, they'll have it every night during the week. So you get to stay there overnight in safari tents, like African style with big beds, and you get to walk around and see the animals being fed, and then you get up in the morning and have close encounters with the animals before the rest of the public arrive. So it's a really fun way and you get a great view of the city and Sydney Harbour. And they say on their website, views of Sydney Harbour on one side and lions, snow leopards and meerkats on the other. So it sounds pretty good to me.
And the views, obviously, because it's on the other side of the harbour. How should we generally get around? How do we get out to the zoo, for instance?
You'd catch the ferry from Circular Quay if you're staying on the eastern side, like the southern side of the city, which most people do because it's really central, it's close to town, closer to the beaches, and that seems to be what people are interested in. So, yeah, that's the best way to get there, by ferry.
Okay.
But generally speaking, public transport is the way to go in Sydney just because the traffic's a pain and people drive on the other side of the road to most of the rest of the world except for the British and a few other countries that drive on the left-hand side like we do. So some people find it a bit confusing and parking is very expensive because there isn't a lot of street parking.
Yeah.
So definitely train, bus, ferry, that'd be the way to go.
Okay. Anything else we should see while we're there? How do we mix with the real Australians while we're in Sydney?
There's so many things to do. So I would definitely go out on the town, even if you don't want to go out nightclubbing. I'm not saying that, but go out and have a drink at the Opera Bar, which is just underneath the Opera House. Amazing views of the bridge and the harbour. Or you can go in the Shangri-La Hotel. They've got a really good cocktail bar as well, which has amazing views. And you can actually see the Opera House as well, rather than being under it. So that bar is called Blue Bar on 36, because I'm assuming it's on the 36th floor. And then you could go to Balmain, Surrey Hills, Darlinghurst or Newtown, have dinner, maybe have another drink if you want to, or go back to your hotel. And if you really want to keep on partying, you can go hang out in King's Cross, which is the nightclub party area where everyone ends up until the wee hours of the morning. Then what else can you do? I suppose you could do things like going shopping. Some people like doing that on their holidays. There's some really nice places with, you know, Australian designers. So Oxford Street is pretty famous. You can go all the way from Paddington, which is up near Centennial Park, where the Baths are, and right down into Darlinghurst, which is right in the city. And they've got lots of cool shops and little cafes and nice restaurants. So you can make a day of just walking down. And if you get tired, you just jump on a bus and go a bit further and jump off again. So it's pretty good.
Excellent. Favorite cultural activities besides, we've mentioned the opera, obviously.
Yeah.
Museums, music.
Yeah, there's music, dance, theatre. We mentioned sport is obviously a big thing. Australians are notorious.
Right, sure. Oh, yeah.
In sport. So you can go and mix with the locals. So if you're there during autumn through to spring, you can go and take in a football game. And when I say football, I'm not talking about American football or European football, soccer, which we call it soccer in Australia.
But Australian rules football here.
No, it's not so big in Sydney, actually.
Oh, okay. All right. That's more of a Melbourne thing.
It's more of a southern sort of Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth. The southern states tend to be more into that. But in Sydney, it's all about rugby league.
Ah, okay. Okay.
Which is probably some of your listeners will know rugby, but rugby union is the internationally played game and rugby league is a kind of a version of that. So it's a very popular, you know, everyone backs their local teams. My sister has a baby who's a year old and her husband took Poppy to the football game, bought her a little football t-shirt. So she's wearing her team colours. It's very cute. People get really into their football. And there's also every year the State of Origin, which is basically between New South Wales and Queensland, which is big. So three games and the best of the three wins the State of Origin for that particular year. Now, I'm born in Sydney. My husband was actually born in Queensland. So in our house, there's a little bit of a tussle when it comes to the State of Origin time. Unfortunately, Queensland has won for the last, I don't even know how many years, so I've just given up on the New South Wales team in all, which is a bit unfortunate. But during summer as well, there's cricket going on. If you're into cricket, I'm not really into cricket. That's probably very un-Australian of me, but I never really understood it.
It's the only sport I've seen that really makes baseball seem speedy.
Yeah, well, I quite like baseball by comparison. I've got to say.
I'm a big baseball fan, but cricket took me a little while to watch when we were in England one time. And it's from a different era, I think, probably more than anything else, when time was measured differently. But what do you see the tourists do and you think, why are you wasting your time doing that?
There's not too many things. I don't really like Darling Harbour. It's a very popular tourist
place. Oh, interesting. Okay. Uh-huh.
But I don't know, I sort of go there. Every time I have to go there, if there's someone's having a birthday in one of the restaurants or a club there or something like that, and I'm just like, oh, really? I have to go to Darling Harbour? Ooh, it's a little bit cringeworthy.
And why is that?
I guess it's just like a tourist central. It's a tourist trap, really. There's a lot of overpriced restaurants, so that's one reason I don't like going there. At the same time, the Sydney Aquarium, which is there, is really good. So if you're into sea life, they have sea dragons, which are pretty cool. You never get to see them anywhere because they're all on the south coast of Australia where the water's freezing. And they also have dugongs, which are like manatees.
Okay.
But Sydney Wildlife World, which is a new attraction, relatively new attraction, it's only been open for a couple of years. And it's all right for the kids, but it's a bit cheesier, I suppose. And then they've also got an IMAX screen down there. So if you like seeing documentaries on a massive screen, that's fine. But there's IMAX all over the world. So there's also a Chinese Garden of Friendship, which it's a nice garden, but it's not something that I would go go and pay money for it's a Chinese garden, so why don't you go and do something that's a bit more Australian?
Okay. And where do you not see the tourists that you think, why doesn't anybody know about this?
You don't get very many tourists on the northern beaches.
Okay. Yeah, we've all heard of Bondi Beach.
Yeah, but the northern beaches, like Palm Beach, which is on the northern tip of the peninsula, there's a beautiful lighthouse and a lovely, it's almost a bushwalk. You walk up onto the lighthouse and you get this great view. On one side, you've got the Pacific Ocean. On the other side, you've got a body of water called Pittwater. And you've got nature all around you. And so that's really nice. It's also famous, probably more the British and any other Australian listeners that are there will know the show Home and Away, which is a TV drama that's actually filmed, the outside beach scene, Summer Bay, is actually filmed at Palm Beach. So it's a bit famous. And they also have really nice fish and chips there. And it's just really nice to sort of walk around and sit on the beach. And there's just locals and people surfing and people there on holidays, that kind of thing.
Okay. And you mentioned the expensive restaurants in Darling Harbour, which, as I recall, we ate at a number of times. So, again, this is why we have you on the show. So where should I go instead?
Oh, gosh, there's so many great food is one of my favorite things. So I could go on about food in Sydney forever. In Australia, there's something called fusion food, which has a lot of Asian influences, obviously being very close to Asia and having a lot of immigrant population. We have really good Asian food, so you can get really good Thai, really good Chinese, really good Laotian, really good Vietnamese, really good Japanese. So there's a lot of influences in the flavors, the herbs and the sauces that they use. But generally speaking, I would go to areas like King Street in Newtown, Victoria Street in Darlinghurst, Stanley Street in East Sydney, which has a lot of Italian there. Crown Street in Darlinghurst as well. Oxford Street, like I mentioned, the shopping, but there's lots of restaurants along there. Bondi Beach has some nice restaurants too. And also Macleay Street in Potts Point. There's a few really good places there. But there's also specific restaurants. Like we have some of the best restaurants in the world. So, for example, Tetsuya's, which is the most highly awarded Australian restaurant. It's Japanese-style food, and they do like a 12-course degustation. It's something that you probably only do, even Sydney side, most people in Sydney might go there once in their lives if they are lucky, because you have to book, you know, at least 3 months in advance, and it's pretty expensive, but it's a really special experience, so that'd be something wonderful to do. Around the quay, there's a lot of other really nice high-end restaurants like Aria, Guillaume at the Opera House, Quay at the Rocks, Wildfire. At Bondi Beach, there's a restaurant called Icebergs, which is right on the southern end of the beach, and they've got a bar there as well. Then if you want to go sort of mid-range, there's some famous restaurants. Darlinghurst and Woollahra, there's Bill's for breakfast and lunch, so if you get up early in the morning and venture there, or if you're close by staying somewhere in those areas. There's also one at Surry Hills that they serve breakfast, lunch and dinner. Billy Kwong in Surry Hills, which is right near Bill's. They don't take bookings. It's quite a small restaurant, so you just sort of have to turn up and hope that you'll get a table soon. But that's also fusion food, which is really beautiful.
You do like food, don't you?
I've got this massive list. We'll skip over the rest of them. Except for, I have to mention Yellow Bistro and Food Store in Potts Point, which is on Macleay Street. It's a really excellent patisserie.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is going to surprise me? Say it's my first time in Sydney. What's going to surprise me?
Probably how cosmopolitan it is. Yeah. I think the 2000 Olympics really put Sydney on the map and people realised, oh, okay, people don't actually ride around on kangaroos and have koala bears and wombats in their backyard. We had an exchange student from New York State a few years ago when I was at school, and she said, I really thought people were going to be riding kangaroos, and she had no idea what to expect. But it's a proper city. The population is about 4.5 million people, so, you know, it's really a world-class city.
So you're saying it's further out that all the Australians are riding kangaroos?
Yeah, yeah. You gotta go to the Northern Territory for something like that.
I was going to say, had she seen a kangaroo before? They're not so good for riding.
That's a right thing.
But you don't need a roo bar on your ute in Sydney.
Definitely not. Definitely not. I mean, I think you're going to hit some drunken pedestrians, but nothing more than that.
When you picture the most beautiful spot in Sydney, what are you picturing?
Ooh, probably right on the outside of the Opera House. When you're facing the north, so you've got the Sydney Harbour Bridge on your left-hand side and the Botanical Gardens and the eastern suburbs sort of sweeping away on your right-hand side. And you sort of look around and look at all the buildings and look at the different iconic structures and you sort of go, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Okay. Your favorite day of the year in Sydney?
I don't know if I have a favorite day. I mean, New Year's Eve is always really fun because you've got these amazing fireworks and everyone takes a picnic and goes and sits on the harbour and watches the fireworks. But probably Australia Day is really good for that as well. That's on the 26th of January.
Okay.
That's the day that in 1788, the first fleet arrived in Sydney Cove on the 26th of January. So that's our national day, the day that Australia was officially settled by the British.
Okay.
And, yeah, they have big celebrations. So people have barbecues. People go, again, sit around the harbour and they have boats all over the harbour, including tall ships, which are replicas of the first fleet. And at night they have fireworks and it's just a really fun atmosphere. And usually the weather's really nice. So that's a good way to enjoy Sydney.
Okay. Finish this sentence for me. It's not the one you think is coming. You can always tell that someone is a tourist in Sydney if they
have a massive camera hanging around their neck.
Well, that's no fair. That's me all the time. But
I don't know very many Sydney-siders who walk around the city with massive cameras around their neck, even the ones who are photographers.
Okay. As we go to wind this down, anything else that we should know before we go to Sydney? Your best money-saving tip, for instance?
Don't come for New Year's Eve.
Okay.
As wonderful as it is, the accommodation absolutely skyrockets around the Christmas New Year period in Sydney because so many people come at that time of year. So, yeah, if you want to save a bit of money, come in the springtime or the autumn when you still get the nice weather, but the prices aren't quite as high.
Okay.
I forgot to mention things outside of Sydney.
Okay.
There's a couple of things that I would recommend. Firstly, going to the Blue Mountains,
sure.
which is the Great Dividing Range, which is 2 hours west of Sydney. It's absolutely beautiful up there. You can go on bushwalks. You go to the Three Sisters, which is another iconic Australian site.
And the Three Sisters are not actually three old ladies?
No, they're not. They're big stone. I don't even know what to call them.
I would say a rock formation. But
and there's an Indigenous story about how they were formed. That there's a few variations, but the one I like is that there were three sisters and there's an evil spirit or like a demon or something like that that wanted to marry them. And their father was a magic man. So he used his special bone to turn them into stone so that they would be protected from the evil man. And he turned himself into a bird. But as he was flying away, he dropped the bone. So he couldn't actually turn them back into three sisters. So they remain stone to this day.
And I have seen the Three Sisters. I enjoyed the visit, enjoyed the area. The Grand Canyon, it's not.
No. Well, there's rock formations and plateaus, and then down the bottom there's valleys full of eucalypts.
Right.
So exactly. The reason they're called Blue Mountains is because the sun basically evaporates the oil from the eucalypt trees and it creates this blue haze.
Oh, interesting.
That's why they were called Blue Mountains.
I did not know that. Okay. Any last tips before we do our final two questions that you do know what they are?
Probably also go to the Hunter Valley if you're into wine and food.
Ah, okay.
So that's 2 hours north of Sydney. And you can do a wine tour as a day trip or you can hire a car and go up there. So there's hundreds of vineyards there from large ones to small boutique ones. And they have a festival every year talking about food and wine. So they have cheeses and wines and restaurants and everything like that. So if you're into wine, that's definitely a place to go.
Excellent. Okay, final two questions. Finish this sentence for me. You really know you're in Sydney when what?
When you're sitting on Bondi Beach with surf lifesavers, surfers, swimmers, sunbathers, and there's all the different languages happening around you.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize Sydney in three words, what three words would you use?
I would say fun, sun, and yum.
You've thought about this, didn't you?
I have to confess, I have listened to quite a few of your shows, Chris, so I did know that that question was coming.
Great. And where can people read more about your travels?
they can go to my blog, which is Alix and Jace, and I'll spell it because it's a bit difficult. So it's A-L-I-X and then the word and. And Jace, my husband, is J-A-C-E .blogspot.com. So alixandjace.blogspot.com.
Excellent. I'll put a link to that in the show notes also at amateurtraveler.com. Alix, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing your obvious love for your hometown of Sydney, Australia.
It's a pleasure. Thanks, Chris.
In news of the community, I received a wonderful email from Edder this week, who said, I discovered your podcast some weeks ago, and I must say it has impressed me, so I just felt like writing some praising words. I am not a native English speaker, and although I have studied it for years, and I'm happy with my overall level, I still have a bit of trouble understanding native speakers when they talk at their usual speed. In order to improve this, I decided to look for podcasts where people talked about things I'm interested in, say, traveling. I started listening to the episodes in which you talk about places I have been or where I'm planning to go and found them very entertaining. After that, I simply decided to start from episode one and I'll eventually catch up. I work in front of a computer many hours a day. I like the way the recordings are made and the questions you ask/answer in them. It makes them very interesting. I'm also glad that I can understand virtually everything without much trouble. American pronunciation is not one of the most difficult to follow, but most of the merit goes to you because you take care in speaking in a clear way while recording. The combination of native and understandable dialogues and interesting topics is just what I was looking for. Thanks a lot for making your show. I'm sure that you'll soon make me discover yet another interesting place on the planet. I'll keep following the podcast from Barcelona, Spain. And thanks so much, Edder, for writing. I really enjoy it when I hear from people who English is not their native language, but they're still able to understand the show. And a while back, I put a post on the Amateur Traveler about at least four different schools that use the Amateur Traveler to teach English as a second language. I'll put a link to that in the show notes on this episode. With that, we're going to end this episode of the Amateur Traveler. Remember, if you happen to be in the Vancouver, British Columbia area in early June, there's going to be an Amateur Traveler This Weekend Travel meetup, and that will be June 10th, Friday, June 10th, with details pending, and I'll put those on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/amateurtraveler. If you want to reach me, you can leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com or drop me an email, as Edder did, to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening. I got to see one more cathedral. I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not.